Okay, first we'll start off like, what is a node? Well, a node is software that downloads a copy of the blockchain, all the history, all the state, all the accounts, transactions, and it keeps that up to date as blocks and transactions take place. And it also helps others run a node. So when you start up a node, you ask all the others for the history of the blockchain. And this is really important because the foundation of Ethereum is really like a network of decentralized nodes. And without those, you know, why are we here? I guess we could just build a centralized solution and have something quicker and yeah. So we'll go over four of like the main reasons why I tell people like, hey, you should run a node. So again, supporting the network, it's each additional node that joins is additional capacity to the network. It makes the network more robust, more secure. Again, more easier for a new node to start up, has more nodes to get the history from. Also, it's really important that we have people running nodes that are from different clients, meaning different node teams, different client teams. Right now, it's kind of a big problem. If you've heard of Geth or Go Ethereum, right now about 80% of nodes are Geth. And if there were to be a bug in Geth, that would cause quite a problem for the network. So we'd much like to have users run like Besu or Nethermind. This makes Ethereum much more resistant. And I'm sure it helps the Geth developers sleep at night as well. Okay, another big reason is to avoid lock-in. This has to do with like the problems of kind of the Web2 that we talk about a lot, centralization. Having a decentralized network of nodes both helps Ethereum from being locked into maybe a small group of developers or teams. And it also it enables like additional systems to be built on top of Ethereum and have these properties. So if you can build a system on top of Ethereum and if designed in the right way, a property can only really be changed if all the users and participants want that property to be changed. When we talk about forkability, this is what we mean. One other cool thing is, kind of relates to the last slide, is you get to vote on changes to Ethereum if you run a node. So let's say Vitalik and some of his friends create an update to Geth and say, we want one ETH every block, and we're going to send it to devs.eth, and they all update their nodes. You can choose to support them by taking that update, essentially voting with their change, or you can decide not to, and you can not take that update and just run the current version that you're running. So if a lot of users don't update their nodes, if the centralized exchanges and your wallet providers, like they don't update their nodes, then this update doesn't take place. But let's say like all of those actors do update, then it's most likely that this update goes through. And if you don't have a node, then you don't really have a choice. You don't have a vote. You don't have a voice. Okay. And this is a picture from one of Vitalik's blogs. Again, talking about, if there were to be some sort of attack on the Ethereum through this, like a new update comes in and it does something bad, it takes funds, that would be considered like the attack we're talking about here. And all the users, all the node operators that decide to take that contentious update, they may end up on one fork, and all the other users and node operators might end up on another fork. And he talks about these are kind of like the three scenarios that would happen in this case. And so we prefer the options like toward the left. So we would want something like this to fail, obviously. And however, even if it just ends up in chaos, meaning like, you know, maybe half the exchanges show one state of the Ethereum and maybe half the, you know, exchanges and wallets show another state of Ethereum, that's still like much better than the attackers becoming victorious. It kind of makes the attack like extremely expensive, even if the attack doesn't, you know, isn't victorious or is, doesn't fail, I should say, it's still extremely costly. All right, and then an important question everyone wants to know is, can I run a full node? A lot of people I talk to, they want to run a node, but they don't know if they can. So here are some of the requirements. Your computer needs 8 to 16 gigabytes of memory, 2 terabytes of fast SSD storage. This is kind of the biggest problem for people is this fast SSD storage. Even some of like what you might think is like a really fast external storage drive, like you know, it's super highly rated for like moving videos and photos, it might not be fast enough for syncing a node. Let's see. Right now, only 1 terabyte is used by nodes to store the state. This is growing about 10 gigabytes per week. Some nodes have options to use less. They're kind of they're just beyond like the experimental phase. They're solid options, but they have their limitations. Don't quite maybe meet all of the use cases that people need. And then the CPU is not usually a bottleneck, so. Most laptops that are within like 5 years old should do fine. 1 second. Internet can be a little bit of an issue. So you need about 10 megabits upload download, and it needs to be lower latency connection. The data cap can be a problem in the US. A lot of internet providers have a 1 terabyte per month cap. I've talked to some people here in South America, and they don't seem to have that problem, or at least they're not aware of it. And then definitely can't really run it on like a slow cellular or Wi-Fi connection. Okay, I'm gonna quickly talk about like the SSD types. Kind of the number that you wanna know is this like 10K input output operations per second. So yeah, nodes, they are essentially writing like tons of like small files back and forth, reading and writing to the SSD. And this is kind of like not really a common rating that SSD companies tell consumers, because it's not quite applicable to what most consumers are doing with their SSD. Most consumers are just, yeah, like moving a large video file, storing photos. Okay, internal SSDs, M2, NVMe, that's like very popular now. Within the like $200 range you can get for this. And then, yeah, you probably just wanna stick with that. The other options, if you have them like lying around, those might work. That's not gonna work. External SSDs, the reason why like I wanna emphasize this is because I think there's a lot of people out there with laptops and don't have like a dedicated desktop or a computer just for running a full node. And so I want people to be able to run a full node on their laptop, maybe like while they're not using it or if they have an extra one. So check to see if your laptop has like one of these connections, either Thunderbolt 4 or 3 or USB 3.2. Okay, now this is the interesting part because these are some of the upgrades or potential upgrades coming to Ethereum in the near future here. So when you hear proto-dank sharding, that's EIP 4488. And actually in the worst case scenario, this would add 2.5 terabytes per year for node operators, which is just not really an option for at-home node operators. So in one of Vitalik's write-ups, he said that like when like if proto dank sharding goes through, like we also need EIP all the fours, And what that does is eliminate historical data requirement from the nodes, which would save like 500 gigabytes. And and kind of like cut down the requirement on nodes having to store like all of this data. State expiry is one that is contentious again. What it does is essentially eliminates the requirement for nodes to like keep on to certain to store certain transactions. Let's say like before a year or so, and unless that state is updated. So I have a feeling this probably won't go through. So don't count on that. Stateless Ethereum is a really cool change. No storage would be required for the node, so it would pretty much eliminate that 2 terabyte SSD requirement. It would still be good for some nodes, some users to have that block, that history, but it wouldn't be a requirement. So you could run a node and still validate all the blocks and transactions and really participate in all those benefits I mentioned earlier without the storage. But again, this requires like Virkul trees and is a pretty difficult upgrade, so don't quite count on that. Ethereum Portal Network is a really cool, actually like separate network built on top of Ethereum or to the side of Ethereum. It leverages like BitTorrent architecture and would kind of enable everyone to run a light node actually like embedded in their wallet. So like most of our wallets right now, they talk to like Infura or Alchemy to get transactions and send a transaction. This would essentially eliminate that point of centralization, and your light node would actually talk to other light nodes, which would talk to full nodes whenever you send a transaction. So really promising, but quite a bit of work there. I think they want to have, just for a time reference, I think they want to have something out by like the end of next year. All right, the fun part, how to run a node. Okay, could I get a quick hands, like if you've heard of dApp node or Ethereum on ARM, I guess? Maybe a quarter of the people in here. Okay, so yeah, they're great. The only difficulty with running a node with dApp node is you pretty much need a separate computer. It installs an entire new operating system, which is also can be a hurdle for people that haven't installed a new operating system on a computer. But they're great. They've been around for a while, and I would say like are pretty battle tested. Option two is the command line, which is for, you know, super technical users, technical users who are familiar with the command line and don't mind monitoring their node from a flurry of like command logs. And then this is actually from Ethereum.org's website. And I actually photoshopped nice node here, or not photoshopped, but like edited the HTML. So this was kind of like the vision for nice node was like, hey, I think we need a third option, one that is for like the non-technical user. There's tons of people passionate in the Ethereum community who want to run a full node, but don't want to hit the command line, don't want to buy another computer. Technically, it's possible to just download an app on your laptop and run a full node. So why don't we have it? So I'm hoping someday when this gets to a more stable version that they'll include me on Ethereum.org, but we got to prove it until then. So I'm going to talk about a nice node, which I am working on. And so this is what the current version looks like. This is our alpha release, version 0. And you can see this is just like an app running on, I think this is Windows. And you've got both your execution consensus clients here. Super simple, stop, start, remove. You can kind of see like, what is it doing here at the top? Like, okay, awesome. I know how much storage it's taking up. I can see like what's the latest block it's at, how many peers is my node connected to. And then kind of in line with this idea that like I want everyone to be able to run a node, I also want everyone to be able to, like, you know, no matter what language you speak, we'll have a translation for that language. And all of these languages were translated by contributors, just people with a good heart who came out and said, yeah, I'll be glad to translate like whatever we can and into another language. So NiceNode essentially supports translations. We just need people who speak all of the other languages to help out. Okay, hopefully this loads. So this is a design for our next version, much like cleaner UI. At first, only the Ethereum node will be available, but I'm designing it to be general so that you can run other nodes. I'll talk more on that. So you pick Ethereum node, then you pick which client you want to run. We conveniently show you which clients are minority clients. You can select a few options, select where you want to store the data at. Again, these are all things you'd have to do from the command line. And then this will actually take the screen. I think I'll show it to you later. And then we have to install some dependencies here. And we just hit start. And our node is syncing and running. And we have this beautiful UI to see our node in. Everything's great. Okay, so this is kind of a key piece of information for a lot of people, is like, can my computer run this node? No, you don't have to go to like guides or websites to read through things. It's in the app. We can see like, hey, is your CPU fast enough? How much memory do you have? Do you have an SSD? Does it have enough space? All of that stuff we can do, so we do it for you. And this may differ by client, and in the future, this may differ by node type, meaning the hardware requirements may differ. Some nodes maybe use a smaller amount of RAM. Others, you might use more storage. So we'll give you that green check mark if you're good to go based on the node type. Okay, a few more screenshots here. Just wanted to leave these up here so you could see them without the video. This is really like important to me, being able to change the settings on your node through the UI. Again, to do this now, you have to go to the docs of the client team, try to find like the right flag with like the --, whatever, and hopefully you format it rightly. I don't know if it needs quotes. Does it need a comma in between or a space? You don't have to do that. With NiceNode, it's here. Yes. Okay, NiceNode is cross-platform, meaning it works with Windows, Mac, Linux. This is a screenshot of Windows. Looks like it's not going to play. I designed NiceNode to be as general as possible, meaning as L2s start to decentralize and provide nodes, maybe sequencers, NiceNode, there should be very minimal changes to support those new node types. And actually, like, users could open a pull request to NiceNode's GitHub, and those new nodes would be in NiceNode in the next release. For the technical folks, NiceNode is sort of a UI wrapper around like Docker containers. So any node type that has a Docker image will be like really quick, really easy to add to NiceNode. Eventually we want to add things like staking as well. So this is a UI screenshot of like what it would look like if you were to add validators. And then you can just kind of see like, Arbitrum does have a node out. I don't know how involved it is in their layer two yet. I think it might kind of just be like a replica node and not quite the same priority as they're kind of like their own. And then the and beyond here is, okay, if our like Web3 dreams take off and Web3 infrastructure is really where we go to and the users control, we control the platform, we control the data, then we're going to want users to run some of these Web3 infrastructure nodes. So just for example, like this video is being live streamed over LivePeer, and they have a network of video transcoders. And then, so they transcode this video, and that's that. Any one of us, if you have a graphics card, can join that live peer network, and we can use our graphics card to transcode that video. So this is just one example of, like a Web3 infrastructure that users can participate in and have more of a say in, and it's something that. I think we can support, and so we show it here. Okay, and this, I think this might be the same video. Okay, and that looks like the same screenshot. Maybe I hit it back last time. Okay, a little bit for our roadmap. So we're really close to releasing the redesigned UI UX and the super simple onboarding, walking you through like the hardware requirements, other things like that. I want to get more translations. We're gonna work on that hard, push on that hard, hopefully by the end of October here. After that, there's some internal changes that we need to make to support more node types for the future. For the technical folks, that's Docker Compose. That means kind of like there are nodes that have contain multiple services, and so that will help those node types. And then additional features. I think I can show you these after. Node notifications. If your node has an error log, like we'll show you a notification. That error log won't get like lost in your terminal, and you'll never know about it. And then you can like search logs. Maybe if your internet goes down, we'll notify you that your internet was down for a brief time. And then after that, by February of next year, we'd like to add layer 2 nodes and more Web3 infrastructure nodes. All right, so it is critical to Ethereum's mission of decentralization, censorship resistance, and resiliency for users to be able to run nodes. And this is extremely important to me because like all of the other good things we talk about here, will only last, will only exist, will only really be possible if we have a truly like user-led culture of like running nodes. And if the core devs continue to make it possible for users to run nodes. So if we want this dream of like open global infrastructure, super low transaction fees for the world, like open financial system, Ethereum for everyone, we need users to continue to run nodes. And Nice Nodes' mission is to simplify node running. And thank you. Gracias a todos. So, I want to open it for questions. And let's see. I just want to move it to this slide. Real quick, if you want to help, we need everybody. Join our Discord, reach out on Twitter. There's a website here you can translate on, which I'll get notified as soon as someone translates. So that's cool, too. And question time.
Thank you for your time, first of all, and presentation. I've got this core philosophical question that I've had for a long time, which is, I feel, and maybe this is a lack of understanding, that full non-validating nodes are overvalued, because in the end, the state is only managed by full validating nodes. So why does it really matter that there are more and more non-validating nodes in the network? What does it matter so much? And isn't it easy for some big entity or to just deploy thousands of full non-validating nodes, which don't need state key, to overpower, to kind of cyber attack the non-validating network?
Okay, so tell me if I understood your question right. So your question is, what's the importance of non-staking, non-validator nodes, like without ETH? What's their importance?
Why is it stressed so much? Let's keep the requirements low so that anybody can run one. When I don't really see the value.
Yeah. So it's a great question, and what it does is the non-ETH, non-staking nodes actually keep the validators. It keeps the ETH stake nodes honest. So yeah, if let's say some centralized staking service gets 75% of the validators and they want to push through a block that sends all the ETH to them, the non-ETH nodes will say, hey, that's a funky block that doesn't follow the rules of Ethereum. That's, you're trying to steal someone's money. Reject that block. I'm not gonna take that transaction and share it with anyone else. I'm going to drop it and say that's invalid. So it essentially keeps them honest.
That makes a lot of sense, but is it still easy to overpower, since you don't need an ETH requirement, like the monetary premium on cycle attacking the network is really low. Like if right now you have 10,000 non-validator nodes, to push another 10,000 into the network is very easy economically. So how strong really is the defense mechanism?
Yeah, that's a good question. So like if someone were to, on some cloud service, just spin up like a ton of non-ETH nodes, I think it still would be pretty costly. And I think even if, let's say they have triple, quadruple the number of like honest, nice nodes, then I think the attack would still fail, or it may, in this case, default to chaos. So I think I'm probably not the best person to speak on terms of like, hey, we need X number of honest nodes. But I think sufficiently, so right now I think it's at about like 8,000. And I don't know what that right number is. I was reading one of Vitalik's blog, and I think he even said, I'm not sure how many it is. It's probably more than like a few hundred, but I don't,
it's not that many.
Yeah, I'm not the best person. I hope the core devs thought about that. Okay.
You talked about adding validators to NiceNode.
Yeah.
And you also talked about making it very simple for people to run on their Windows computer that don't have very much tech experience. It's, my father could run it, my mother could run it in their home, and they don't do anything with tech. So if they get all this set up and I show them what Ethereum is and they put all this money into it, now they have this money running on this Windows computer there and it has no battery backup, it has no, they just shut it down because they don't want it running all night. Well, obviously now they're getting slashed, and so you have a lot of these people who don't know about these things, you know, how to set up the hardware. Aren't you kind of concerned about that? Or maybe they think, I want to set up two. They use the same contract addresses. They set up two, and boom, 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 they start getting slashed because you can't have two. Have you thought of, before people get into this?
Yeah, that's a good question. Is like, if we do make it easy to use, like, we need to also make it very clear, like, what they need to do, and then probably also make it very easy for them to stop it or withdraw or notify them. If we're going to make it easy for people to onboard, we also need it. That's a great point. We need to make it easy for them to kind of get off or help them get off.
You mentioned, hopefully it comes on Ethereum's website later, like you edit the HTML to put it there. Yep. I would think that would be one of the vendors where they say, well, how responsible are they? It's like nice to know the responsibility to do that before, like, they're going to say, okay, this could be used for future times because they are responsible.
Yeah, I think the quick answer is I would, in the app, we're going to just make it like super obvious, like lots of warnings, like, hey, this you need to have your internet on, you need to have this computer up. And yeah, hopefully it's our solution is a lot better than the alternatives. Like, hopefully we're way better at notifying people when their node does go down, things like that. Yeah, no incentives right now for a non-ETH, non-validator node, yeah. So, and that's a great point. Like, if you're someone who, like, the SSD is, like, a big commitment for you or purchase, like, maybe running a full node, I don't want to discourage you, but maybe it's not the best use of like, your money or resources. Like, there is no, like, direct incentive at the moment, other than obviously like making sure Ethereum works and stays up. So it is, yeah. That's a great point. Yep.
Yeah, I had a question that's really related to what you're saying. Like, it's from personal experience. Like, when the Beacon Chain just launched, it was also one of the first repositories. I'm not a real technical guy, so I just thought it would be called the command line. And I ended up using DevNode, and the onboarding was pretty good, but then over a month, like, it was pretty high maintenance. Like, if the client update, and then something breaks, it's really easy to get into it, or like spin up the node and come down to fix it. It's really hard to debug. So I guess it's not really a question, but I think it's more of a challenge. Like, how do you build a, you know, one of your solution for creating one competitor? It also allows for some debugging to be basically when I ask my more capable friend to look into what's going on. I remember when I was using Jeff, but it was really hard to debug. And the guy was recommending it to yourself and just follow the guy and just comment on that. Is that something you can think about in terms of one of the challenges?
Yeah, I mean, certainly we want to make it as user friendly as possible. And you know, one thing we have thought about is like letting users opt into automatic updates for their nodes. So wherever possible, they don't need to do anything. And I think that that's probably a big part of running your node is just doing those updates and then having some sort of like alerting. In terms of like if some other problem were to happen, like we would try to diagnose it as best we can, but I suppose that like for an issue we can't diagnose. I don't have an answer, but it's something I'll definitely keep in mind.
Yeah. Maybe it's possible to have some kind of way that you can get access to some kind of command line interface and have a technical friend to do some debugging.
Okay.
Basically, circumventing the UI itself.
Yeah. The other thing I do want to have is like if I'll like show the command that nice node used to start the node, so you can just copy and paste that command and like leave the app if you want, and then you can just go to the command line and that's something I want to do too. Right here.
Very quick. First of all, congratulations. I really like the new UI that will come.
Thank you so much.
I have a question regarding all these challenges. It's based on like how to get people that's non-technical people into this ecosystem, right? So I really like see this kind of UI that's guiding to you and trying to get this with basically no effort, right? As you say, like how to build a one-click application. My question is, when your team like build this, it's based on like there is a research behind, like for what kind of age or what is the this kind of people that can afford like a, this is easy to use, because even if this is easy to use for us, maybe that kind of steps and select option, all the stuff, it'll be tough for an elder or some, or even a young people. Like, there is a research behind that, like this is like accurate for this age people or non-technical people, whatever.
Okay, so just to repeat for the stream, it sounds like there's concerns that we need to make sure that if it is super easy to get in to get started, that we make either some guide rails or some just make it the user aware that what they're getting into. And so yeah, I mean, what I'd have to say to those concerns is I think we could do something where instead of letting like the user, it's just something I thought of now, like click like yes, and then they're good to go, like deposit. Maybe having some kind of like speed bump, a kind of thing where like they have to either like demonstrate some technical knowledge of like what they're getting into, just sort of like maybe basic quiz or something like that. But other than that, I mean, did I address your concerns? Was there anything else or no? Okay. Yeah, I think maybe some sort of speed bump, just so they can't click through like super fast and get themselves into something they didn't know. And now this program is taking up all their SSD space in the background. Yeah, absolutely. Right there in the white sweater. I think you were first, Bob. Blue shirt. So if you don't have any ETH and you're not staking, no slashing. If you're staking with NiceNode and your node were to go down, it would be slashed just like any other node. That's a great question. His question was, could this be a web app? And I don't think so as of now. I think there are limitations on the browser, which you can't basically run a command. A web page can't just like run an arbitrary command on your computer, but like an installed application can. Now the front end part of NiceNode, we could separate that out and put that as a web page. It's actually like mostly the front end is basically a web page. It's basically running in Chromium. There's the underlying architecture for NiceNode is called Electron, and it basically downloads Chromium, and so it's like its own little web browser there with extra permissions to interface with the operating system. Yep. Any other questions? Okay, here again. Right now, no plans. I want to stay open source as long as possible. We've been supported by first ETH Staker in a CLR fund, and then Gitcoin, two rounds of Gitcoin. And then we recently got a grant from CityDAO, which funded the like improved onboarding experience that I showed you all today. And then hopefully we'll get more grants and stay open source. Yep. I've seen people ask that. I think if there could be in the future, and I think absolutely. I think there are lots of groups or foundations, maybe like ETH Staker or the Ethereum Foundation, who would provide some incentive. I think the limitation here is probably like you need to prove that the person running the node is a human, or that proof of humanity civil resistance problem. So I haven't thought through the whole like consequences of tying your proof of humanity ID to your node, but I think with that, people would give out incentives. Other than that, I don't know. I don't know how they would do it without civil resistance. Yeah. If you're not staking or not validating, there are no incentives. No monetary rewards.
Does the app know when you are like at home? Where people are gonna look at your SSD and have like a meeting, but if you go outside, they will be looking at it. Does the app realize?
Yeah. I mean, that's something I've thought about. I haven't like quite worked on now, but the app can know whether you're on battery, whether you're on power, whether you're on Wi-Fi, Ethernet, Right now we don't have like any internet speed check, but that's something we could definitely add. So I want to, I do, in the long term, I do want to make it so that, yeah, you can close your laptop lid, the node stops peacefully wherever you go next. You open your laptop, maybe just plug it in, you eat dinner and it's syncing like while you're, yeah. And then while also potentially like you get, we could have a setting like while I'm working, don't use resources, like just run in the background or like just pause while I'm working, maybe from my typical work hours. Yeah. Okay. All right. Anyone else? Okay. I think that's it. I posted the slides on the NiceNode Twitter. There's tons of links in here. You can check out the slides there. Awesome. Thanks, everyone. Thank you. And gracias los organizadores y al equipo y a todos. Okay, that's it. Thanks.